Welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast, featuring interviews with incredible working artists who are also mothers and compelling conversations regarding parenting and the art world. These conversations create a space for inclusivity and support for artist mothers worldwide. I'm Kaylin Butine, painter, mom of three, and podcast host. I'm so grateful you are tuning in, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
The nighttime is very much like a time that you can make, you're just kind of deciding, you know, because it's like your kid's finally asleep. You want to unwind and just zone out, you know, like then you're like, okay, well, this is my opportunity for a lot of people to be like, okay, well, I guess I should do art, you know, that it's hard to keep eyes on like prioritizing yourself, you know, when you're a caregiver, because it's like, it's very draining physically and emotionally. And so I think the nighttime is when you're like, kind of like, okay, well, this is my opportunity in deciding, am I going to do this or not do this? You know, personally, I've used a lot of nighttime times because I'm a sculptor in my studio. You know, I don't make things in here as like my art admin time, you know, like where I could catch up on things or like think through something or write out a proposal. During those times, you know, it's very much, I think, you know, using like her being at school, that's like my studio time to like just do the things I need to take care of. You know, this life, it looks very different depending on if you're a single parent or what, you know, there's multiple types of caregiving if you're taking care of your parents or, you know, all of that. But I think painting at night is very much a time of like that, you know, decision time.
It is my pleasure to welcome the two Painting at Night 2024 jurors to this episode, Sean Desiree and Elisa Siklianos Carter. Sean is a self-taught mixed media and interdisciplinary artist born and raised in the Bronx. Sean produces sculptures and installations that serve as sanctuaries, protectors, and symbols of empowerment for marginalized communities. Their interest includes social engagement and disruptive interventions that counter biased societal structures. In addition to being an artist, they are an educator facilitating the BIPOC builder immersions at Soul Fire Farm in Grafton, New York. In 2022, they were awarded fellowships at Leslie Lohman and Socrates Sculpture Park. They have attended residencies at More Art, Mass Mocha, and Wave Hill. While an artist in residence at More Art, they debuted their socially engaged public art sculpture Beam Ensemble in collaboration with the New York City Department of Cultural Affairs. And Elisa Siklianos Carter is a mixed media artist from upstate New York. Her practice explores themes of Black boundlessness, infinitude, and futurity. She is endlessly inspired by light, both physically and metaphysically, fractals, patterns in nature, and the dark night sky. Elisa is a recipient of the Sustainable Arts Foundation grant and Forlin Fellowship and has been awarded residencies at Malay Arts, Vermont Studio Center, and the Wassaic Project, among others. Select group exhibitions include the James Cohen Gallery in New York, the Tang Teaching Museum in Saratoga Springs, New York, and solo exhibitions at Friedman Gallery in Beacon, New York, Union College in Schenectady, Kavi Gupta Gallery in Chicago, among others. Her solo exhibition, In Space and Splendor, A Topography of Wildness, is currently on view at the San Luis Obispo Museum of Art in San Luis Obispo, California, through March 2024. Well, I am so excited to welcome both of you. That was quite a lot of amazing things to say and share, and there's so much I can't wait to talk about. Sean and Elisa, welcome to the Artist Mother Podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you, Kaylin. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So lots to dig into here. I can't wait to hear about your work and, you know, you two as caregivers, your partnership. I'm really interested in, you know, kind of what it's like to have two full-time artists being caregivers and partners. And we're going to get into that. But first, I want to kind of set up who you are as artists for our listeners and a bit about your background. So I'm wondering if art was something that was introduced to you you know, as a kid, the idea of being a full-time artist or artist as career, other than, you know, being handed a pack of Crayola crayons, every kid, I think, loves art materials. But was art introduced to you from your childhood, or was it something that kind of found you later on in life? Sean, would you start for us?
I think in a more serious way later on in life. I mean, I think most, you know, people have the introduction of art, like you said, like Crayola crayons, and like, you know, you have to do some art activities throughout school. But I really didn't think about being an artist until much later, probably not until 2018, 2019, really, is when I started to think about or been introduced to it as like a form of expression for myself, I would say.
Were you, like, what was that introduction? Was it just getting to know artists? Was it, you know, falling in love with art on your own through another way? What was the introduction for you?
It's multifaceted. I would say one element of it is I was a furniture maker before becoming an artist. So it's a form of art, obviously, like, you know, but I didn't think of it as like, I'm an artist. So I think having some sort of maker background was step one. Step two is my partner. She had started her art career already before that. So, you know, seeing her become an artist and just like seeing how she applies like her thoughts into this field, and through her meeting other artists and seeing more broadly how people create art. And I think lastly, there's a lot of thoughts going through my head, and art was a way to solve them. You know, I got into art based on wanting to support community, and I wanted to do a fundraiser in Hudson, New York, to benefit other artists and makers that live in public housing, because I grew up in public housing in the Bronx. And that was my initial, that was my first show as an artist, is making these 2D works that were aerial views of public housing complexes in Hudson, New York. And that really motivated me to create art for the first time. So that was how I got into art.
Amazing. I love that connection between, like, you were already a furniture maker and, you know, had sort of a maker's mind, but it sounds like you were really influenced by Elisa's, like, perspective on the world as an artist, and how art changes the way you think, and it changes the way you present ideas and the way you want to, like, I don't know, fix things in the world, you know?
try to, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Elisa, what about you? How were you kind of introduced to art? Was it a part of your childhood or not really?
It was a part of my childhood. My mom, well, actually, I didn't really go to a lot of museums as a kid, but I remember my grandfather lived in Williamstown, Massachusetts, and we would go to the Clark Art Institute a lot. And so I remember going there and seeing, I think it's Degas' Dancer, Little Dancer, or right, the sculpture. And that's like burned into my mind as like one of my earliest sort of relationships or memories of seeing art, like with a capital A, you know?
Right.
And my mom is very artistic in her thinking, and she's very creative, creatively minded. And so I feel like she really, like her sort of feelings about being in artistic spaces influenced me too, where it's like, this is really beautiful, and having like beauty around you. And then I went to, and then all throughout elementary school, I was very artistic. I would get in trouble for, you know, coloring in class and kind of daydreaming and drawings, and my mom would, you know, frame and put paintings of mine on the walls and in our house. And so I felt like that they were like important, and that like making art was like a good thing. And that it was powerful. Like I did feel like I had this like power to sort of create a world. And then throughout high school, I was in like art club and those kind of things. And that was like my, I guess going back in middle school and high school was like my refuge, like where I felt the most comfortable. But then I ended up going to a boarding school in Williamstown, Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
And so right next to the Clark Art Institute. So I got to like be there again in that space, but it was very art focused. It was academic, but really art focused. And so that's where I like really like, I did photography. I did like maybe a little bit of printmaking, but mostly painting and photography.
Mm.
But when I went to college for the first time, before I had our daughter, I didn't apply to school for art. Like I kind of didn't see it as something that was really, that you could do for a job. I was like, I thought it was selfish actually. Like I remember being 18 mm. being like, well, I'm not going to like go, you know, apply to the portfolio because I need to do something more sort of, just like that's more helpful to the world or what I imagined was more helpful. And it wasn't until later, like I think 28 or 29 that I went back to school, and then I cycled through a bunch of different majors, and I, you know, I was like a nutritionist, or I was going to be a nutritionist or a psychologist or a social worker. And then, I settled on art therapy and I ended up hating it because, I just realized I wanted to just be an artist. And I forget that this is true, but one of the reasons also, like when I decided to become an artist, and it's sort of like, it's delusional in some ways, you know, because you're like, I'm going to do this. And I remember being like really like deep in Delulu about it and being like, I can do this. But it was because I wanted to make money for my family. Like I was like, I'm not really made for like other kinds of work. I'm not, I'm late for everything. I'm like a weird, you know, like I just was like, I need to figure out something that where I can like be myself, but also possibly make money. And so, and that was like most people would be like, I'll go to business school or I'll go to whatever. But I was like, I'll be an artist and I'll somehow make it. And it worked, you know, and I mean, it's like, what is that? The definition of it being successful, but, yeah. And so that was like, when I decided to do that, then I was just all in. And I think, I mean, going to high, like when I was in high school, I did like read about a lot of artists and learn about other kinds of art making. But I guess it wasn't until I was actually like, you know, in my late 20s and I was making it where I was like, oh, this is really important. And this is something like, again, like in a serious way, because all throughout Aurora's life, our daughter Aurora, like I was making little puppets and doing things.
You were creative.
Yeah. Yeah. For her specifically, you know?
But
later it was like a really like a way to like feel like I could be myself and be free in the world, but also provide for my family. Yeah. So that's like kind of how the trajectory.
Amazing. I love that you kind of had that time in that area. I have a friend who teaches at Clark Art Institute and like, I know Massmoka is like close to there. And just like, I went to grad school at New Hampshire Institute of Art, which was recently bought out by, I think, New England University or something. But so I've, you know, traveled up like through that way. It's like so rich in kind of that art, a little bit of like old school art tradition, then, you know, kind of like this, just this culture of like appreciating art, I think is there. So that's great that you had that. I'm also like really struck by how both of you, so when I, you know, I think one of the questions I struggle with when I'm asked myself as an artist is kind of the question that I often start these interviews with like, have you always wanted to be an artist? And for me, the answer is no. But I sometimes feel intimidated that when artists are like, yes, like I've had to make something every day of my life. Like I had a drive to make. And, you know, kind of the way I frame it is for me, I more chose the lifestyle of an artist. Like I wanted to exist in the world as an artist. It wasn't so much that I had to make things.
Right. Totally. Yeah.
And I kind of feel that with both of you that like, it was as much about like the way that you want to like position yourself to view the world and interact with the world, rather than just, I have this drive to make things, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I could easily like go many months not making anything.
Yeah.
If I'm left to my own devices. And it's like, I live by deadlines. Like that's what, I mean, I love making. I love.
Yeah, me too.
And I'm like, oh, I was like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, there's never like a day where I'm like, I mean, I have doubt, obviously self-doubt all the time, but there's never a day where I'm like, I'm not like sort of meant to be an artist, but a maker and a creator. But it's not like, I know people like that who are like, well, don't you just feel like you have to do something? And I'm like, no, I don't feel like that. Like, I don't feel less of an artist because of that, but it's not like this sort of compulsive, like drive. It's just like, yeah, I love it. And it is, I do feel there's like a spiritual and sort of like cosmic, astrological, whatever connection or reasoning, but I don't, I can just as easily like sit and watch TV or be outside in the garden or whatever, you know, and be okay.
I mean, I use it as a tool or a device, you know, because there's many ways that I feel like I could attain my goals, you know, especially being like more of a conceptual artist, you know, it's about the idea and like what's the best way to present it, you know, like the sculpture I did at Socrates is like, you know, I wanted to address the issue of warmth in public spaces and how like heat isn't provided outdoors because, you know, a lot of cities and towns are worried about people without homes congregating in those areas. And so all of us suffer, you know, because we don't want to provide this service. And, you know, there's different ways I could go about it. I could go, you know, within like city government and try to, you know, adjust, you know, try to infiltrate that system to like try to get this to be more of a care issue within communities. But I felt like art is a better approach. It's freer. I have more control. I can have more impact almost, you know, so I create sculptures that provide free heat to public. So that's how I look at it as far as like, it's not something of just like, you know, cause you can feel very self-important, you know, sometimes the artist could be creating your whole story, creating your narrative around your work and like why it's important. I see it more connected to that.
Amazing. I love that approach and perspective. Sean, I'm going to have you start again, but I would love for you to describe your work. I want you to jump back in because you just shared about one specific piece, but I'm curious to know a bit about your process and your medium, knowing that you work in sculpture and kind of socially engaged projects. You know, it makes sense that you have that furniture background now. I didn't know that. So what's your elevator pitch when you describe the work that you make and you know, the process, processes that you use to build it?
Yeah, I'm working on that now, actually. And it's it's like changing. You know, I'm in school right now as well. I'm doing an MFA program at SUNY Albany. And I really, my work takes so many forms, like I was just talking about, you know, like I'll just talk about like maybe like one or two projects that I'm working on now to give kind of like a range. That Socrates project started out with an idea. A project that actually I have a show up now is an installation, more of like a sculptural work because installation worked better for it. It's I was thinking around the issue of allyship and like what people think they're doing versus what they're doing, you know, the delusion between like how much of an ally you are or not. So I presented a space where people walk through. It's like a series of questions and answers, and it takes you on a path depending on your answers. So like, you know, a question could be like, you're a hiring manager, right? And there's a person of color up for a position, the top candidate. Do you A, offer them the average salary, B, for them to negotiate their salary to get a larger salary, or C, do you offer them the larger salary? And then you go on a path based on those questions, because I think that people have a hard time with like what showing up is, you know, isn't. You know, questions around reparations, like, would you give up 5% of your income to feed into reparations, you know, like, or thinking about inheritance, like things that we need. And then the final, at the end of the path, when you get to the end of the questions are, you're greeted by portraits that give a personal story from a person of color of having to navigate these systems or their story around dealing with like not being supported. It's and another thing I'm doing is around basketball, sports, and also queer culture and how, like, in these spaces where it's just hyper masculine, you know, you mm-hmm. can get away with, like, you know, there's a lot of like homoerotic jokes, gestures, mm-hmm. like all things that are
butt slapping present. And
exactly
bro talk, bro behavior,
exactly. And it's just like, we have to be like, this is a part of the culture, like mm-hmm. queerness is a part of the culture, but it needs to be shifted, the narrative, in order for people to be more comfortable. So that's like an installation where, and there's sculpture works that are like basketball shorts that are filled with crystals. And then there's like a video work that I made that is like archive footage and audio that I've found mm-hmm. that kind of speaks to this. So those are some ideas of like how it ranges, how it shows up.
The ally installation, where is, like, give everybody the details. So if they're in the area, they can go see that. Is that still up?
Yeah, it's in Athens, New York at Athens Cultural Center.
Amazing.
And it's on view until February 11th.
Okay. So might be after this episode comes out, but, you know, definitely look into both of those. Thanks for sharing that. I feel... I'm always so inspired by conceptual artists because I'm like such a material and process-based artist. Like for me, I'm like, it's about the texture of the thread and the, like, Alisa, you're like shaking your head. Like you're like, yes, I get it.
Yeah.
But like conceptual artists, I'm like, you're so fearless. Like, how do you do it? Like you care so much about the concept and you'll do whatever to execute the concept. It's just like amazing. Like you're like, oh, I took photos, I did an installation, I created a video. I'm just always so blown away by conceptual art that is done like so well, because I just think artists like you are, I don't know, you just must have like such a dedication to, you know, the concept, maybe in the same way that I have a dedication to like the process or the materials.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. This is very aligned with you for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's hear more about your work, Lisa, and your process and what you make.
Yeah. Materials huge. Like mm-hmm. I'm a material girl. There's more, but I just start with like, just like rich texture and like the process of making and feeling like I'm a witch / archaeologist, you know, in the studio cave.
Yes.
But my work, it started with this idea of it centers on black hair styles. So that's like at the core, even in like the really abstract work, it's still thinking about sort of hair as this jumping off point. And I was imagining sort of like, it was like a reaction or response to white supremacy and white delusion.
Mm.
And imagining our hairstyles were like sort of responding as and becoming these protective mechanisms from this white supremacy. So like mm-hmm. our hair covering our faces and augmenting and growing into these like really wild sort of mask like structures or shapes. And even like
a
right
shield
now,
or armor.
Yeah, but yeah. like but biological, like right. not something you'd put on. It's like from us of right. our bodies. And right now, and I should know the name and what's happening, but there is like a young boy who I think in Texas who has been suspended because of his dreadlocks.
Yes, and, I've seen that.
Right. Yeah, and that's been happening for years, forever, mm-hmm. really. But like, so like in that instance, I was imagining a situation just like that, where like his dreads become even more sort of like
Daryl George. What
is his name?
Daryl.
Daryl George. Even more like quote unquote offensive, like just really mm. going beyond, you know, mm-hmm. What the viewer, like that person, the superintendent, whoever it is, like is feeling about his hair. And then, so I imagine us as Black people going through this process as this, like, this sort of sacred adaptation or divine technology that we've developed to protect us, and then leaving Earth. So that was like how it started, my work and creating these future ancestors who were these beings who went through this process and this sort of mutation or transformation, and then they leave, and or we leave, or whomever, and exist safely and protected somewhere else. But then it started to like grow into this like larger story. And I imagined, you know, I've done work in thinking about and focusing on like ancestors who were trafficked during the Middle Passage and went overboard. And as they went overboard, their hair, mm-hmm. Again, this like divine technology was triggered, and their hair grew into these like afro sort of masks that, you know, like scuba masks almost. Mm. And they were able to exist underwater and live underwater and you know, escape that, mm-hmm. enslavement. And so that's where it started, and that's like where it's kind of gone, but it's like grown into thinking about like Black expansiveness and how to be, to feel, and queerness as well, and feminist, and like to take up more space and to be bigger, and like what it looks like to really be boundless and, and unrestricted. And so often when we are as Black people, you know, we're controlled in this way, or we have to sort of control our, responses or our mm-hmm. bodies, or so that we aren't expelled from school, or so we aren't, physically harmed mm-hmm. or literally killed, or, you know, so, or so we can get that job, or so we can, you know, whatever, have some success in some way. And so wanting to like kind of push out and like mm-hmm. expand. And so I like with the hair work, like these printed images, I use a lot of glitter. So glitter is, so it's like really heavy, right? But it's also, it's not, there's like joy and there's pain and there's all of this. It's not like just one or the other or something, but, material is huge. And I think about like, sort of adornment and, like opulence and magic. And so I use a lot of glitter, which is like so beautiful, but also super annoying and gets everywhere. but it's so gorgeous. It's just like, I love it. And other like crystals and micaceous iron oxide and glass. And so just like, I like maximalism. I've been making these like more kind of landscape, like Black landscape paintings, like imagining this Black world and Black using, like, it could be at night, it could be, you know, like a world inhabited, like this safe refuge inhabited by Black people. What, there's like a bunch of different, or like spirit, it could be like a more internal, like inner world that I, where I really like to exist. So like using Black in that way, to represent those many, things, but yeah, so those paintings are like very textured and like kind of like Black tar or like the surface of the moon. So it's really funny because we just sort of realized, like Sean and I, like how different, I mean, we knew, we were like, we're really different, but like, I was like, oh, you, like, I was like conceptual, or I was like, what? Like, and I know what it is, but my brain is like, I don't even know. Like it, there's an idea that there's right. like the narrative, right? But it's like so much, I'm thinking about the material. I'm like, what does it look like? What does it feel like? Like mm-hmm. so much of it is feeling. So it's like so intuitive. It's so, just like, I'm imagining, like, it's just like a constant, like me imagining, like I'm in the painting or something, or in the piece. And because of that, I feel like sometimes it's harder for me to sort of explain it. Cause I'm like, oh, can you just feel this? Can you just like try to walk into this material with me? And like, we'll just hold hands instead of like, where Sean's like very clear. They're like, oh, this is the idea. And I'm like, huh, what is that like to be able to explain your, I'm just like, I was like, oh, cause you're like starting the idea. Yeah. And it's like, anything goes. And it's like, no. This is like a very particular world for me. This is very rich, like, you know, delicious.
It's a story though.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's more narrative based. Yeah. Totally.
Yeah. Like I think, I don't disagree with you. I feel like the You know, Sean, like the way that you described your work, there's a bit more accessibility in terms of like what you're communicating. Yeah. Whereas, you know, Elisa, like for you, it seems like the accessibility is more in the story, you know,
and the
narrative that you are, you know, like, because we all connect to imagination, to, you know, futures that we want to exist in.
Right.
And I just think like, you know, you're the way that you both produce work, it offers like the audiences of that work kind of different entry points, which totally. Is great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like, it's exciting to see that. And you're like, oh, okay. Like I love, you know, learning from each other in that way.
The big textile pieces that I've seen of yours, you're painting on fabric. Is that right? Like they're almost like these big long scrolls.
Oh yeah, that's linen. So okay. That's yeah. It's just like linen that hasn't been stretched, and I don't really know how to do that. And it's just like and I don't want to do it. But yeah. That's like trimmed, I guess is what I'm calling it, by velvet.
Oh yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you.
This episode is sponsored by the Thrive Together Network. TTN is a virtual community I run for women artists. We have a space right on the network for artist caregivers to connect, and it is truly my favorite place on the internet. Every Tuesday, I co-host a session called Art and Tea, where our community comes together to connect as artists. We share our goals and provide accountability for each other and talk about lots of topics artists deal with, ranging from how to put on an exhibition, organization tips for your studio, ways to manage stress, and so much more. The Thrive Together Network is an inclusive platform for artists, and so much is included in your membership. It's crazy. We offer 2 virtual art residencies a year to help you stay on track with your studio goals. We have an exhibition program called Taking Up Space, those Tuesday art and tea sessions that I mentioned. We have monthly workshops on art business, art writing. We even have a book club. Plus, there's hundreds of artists to connect with from all over the world. Because of the Artist Mother partnership with TTN, we have a discount code for you, just for artist caregivers to join the network. You can take $10 off your monthly membership fee for the Thrive Together Network, but your best deal is actually if you sign up for a year with us, commit to a whole year of joining us and joining our programming, and you'll save over $140 on your membership. So head to www.artistmotherpodcast.com/network to learn more and check it out. Membership comes with a free 2-week trial too, so you can truly get in there and see what you think before you actually commit to becoming a member. Just a reminder, on the network, we have a special group for artist caregivers where we have intentional conversations about our roles and identity as artists who are making work and balancing all of the caregiving that we do. We even have quarterly meetups for this group for deeper times of connections. I would really love to get to know you on the network, see more about your work and your art practice, and just connect with you in this amazing, compassionate, intentional, and encouraging community of female artists. We are all about providing resources to help you grow your art career, and this effort is combined with tools and the means to connect with the artists who are on a similar path, who are doing similar things with their careers. So once again, you can head to artistmotherpodcast.com/network to learn more, to get our discount code, and to join the Thrive Together Network. Oh, amazing. Elisa, I just wanted to bring up one word that you have in your bio, because this is a word that I think about a lot, the word fractals.
Oh, yeah.
I first was introduced to this concept through the book Emergent Strategy. And I think my interest in it is, which the idea of fractals is, you know, for those who aren't familiar, is this idea of like patterns where one shape is repeated over and over, and it actually creates like, you know, kind of a larger shape that resembles the initial shape. So I'm not describing that very well, but is that?
No, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of in the way that a fern, which I have like a big tattoo of, you know, each leaf on a fern actually looks like a mini fern. Right. And then when you view the full fern, you see like that same shape. And I clung to that idea when I first heard it. Because I think it like represents community building, you know, for me, but also the types of work that I'm interested in, which is mostly based in, you know, painting and quilting traditions. I love the like idea of something small, like small moments that build to the kind of life that you want to live, you know? And I just feel like it, like, I don't know, it connects to like the meaning of every decision that we make, you know? Kind of back to what you were saying, Sean, about, you know, intention and impact, and, you know, the idea of like choices matter, you know, and choices like take you on this path. So I don't know. I love that word, and I think about it a lot as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So both of you, I want to hear a bit about your partnership and how you are navigating two careers in the arts. What does your partnership look like? And also, you know, your caregivers, you have a daughter, right? Aurora.
Yes.
And yeah. I know that you're both in grad school, I think. So like, how is all that working? What's kind of some of the ways that you are balancing, you know, the artist lifestyle, and caregiving roles?
I think in several ways, like one is like undying support for each other's practice. Like, you know, my practice is my practice.
Yeah.
In the sense of like, yeah, like whatever, is going to be supportive to you, I take it equally as serious. So I think that helps in, how we approach each other. Like if opportunities come up, you know, I mean, right now it's, our child is like older now, she's 19. But throughout, our
that
time,
helps.
No, that 100% helps. You know? Like, when Elisa first started being artists, how old was she?
Aurora was 12. Like she was younger. No, because I went to grad school the first time when she was like maybe I don't know. I'm like, what is the time?
What is
maybe 11 or 12.
Preteen or something like that.
Yeah, she was maybe like 10. I went back to school when she was 7, and then like I think I decided to be an artist when she was 9 or 10.
Like, you know, at one point, like when Elisa got her first residency at the Vermont Studio Center, you know, we were like, oh, yes, you have to do it. And so she was gone for a month. So it's me and Aurora, you know, like, I guess like, switching off, you know, for opportunities. And we've been able to do that because we, like live in Albany, I grew up in New York City. It's like cheaper to live here.
Right.
Elisa was able to, you know, get a house for relatively cheap here. And so, you know, we've cut down a lot of our expenses by not having to like have a mortgage or rent. So it's like a real privilege to be able to not have to have that stress in order to be able to focus a bit more art and be able to step in and support each other. We've definitely, you know, we're still not like out of like caretaker role, even though our child is 19, you know? And so I think that almost like, because we're in the same boat, it makes it a little bit more flexible in a way mm-hmm. of like being able to support our adult now and be our artists. I don't know. What's your perspective on that, Elisa?
How do we do partnership and being artists? As Sean said, like I started it, and then Sean was like, oh yeah, like as far as like I'm gonna be an artist, this makes sense. And I didn't start it, but like we influenced each other.
Yeah.
And then Sean was like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Like I'm supposed to be an artist too. And I think once we realized that, it was like we're pretty mesh. We're like, mm-hmm. yeah, like each opportunity, like if Sean gets a grant, it's like, I've gotten a grant. I mean, literally like the money, like we share money. And then also like, you know, sort of, it's, I don't know, internally, like it feels like I'm winning too. So like each win is like we are so excited when one of us gets something. It's just like, yes, because it just, I mean, it usually leads to like actual sort of like, you know, financial support in some way, like whether it's like someone like later on we get a show or whatever. But, and so that's really helpful because we have to survive and thrive, but also it's like each step is kind of an affirmation to like our purpose mm-hmm. and like what we are supposed to be doing. And that's like, that's a really important, I want that like kind of feeling a lot. Like I want to feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing and I'm like mm-hmm. on the right path. So I think like, yeah, like just always like uplifting each other. And I feel like Sean is brilliant. Like when they decided, I mean, I know they are, but when they were like, I'm going to be an artist, I was like, duh, like, oh my God, like, of course, what are we doing? That's what we're supposed to be, you know, like, and me too, I feel that way. But I feel like we really give each other permission to be, just like, to just, it, again, like this feeling of just like expand to be our biggest and like brightest selves. And we really want that for each other. And I would not be able to do it without, I mean, like that residency at Vermont Studio Center was huge. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do, you know, this is, I need the support. And Sean was like, of course. And it would be the same vice versa, but it just was like, I couldn't have started this path in this way without, and when I was in grad school, like staying up like at night, I was like, you know, working on my pieces, and they totally just were, you know, on with Roar the whole time. So that was like really amazing.
You're kind of making me emotional because
I know. I was like, are you tearing up?
Yeah, I'm totally tearing up because I was like, oh my God. What I'm hearing you describe is that both of you are limitless because of each other's support. And part of the reason that I'm crying is because I'm like so happy that you have that in each other, but also like I have a partner who I know I have no limits in what I could do in my career because I have a partner who, like, if I say I'm going to Germany for 3 months, like, we'll figure it out, you know?
Absolutely.
And I know so many artists, particularly artists who identify as mothers, do not have that kind of support.
I know. It's, absolutely.
And I'm just like, your reflection just made me so full of gratitude.
Oh, I love that. It's so beautiful.
But also, like, I just think it's so cool that, you know, because most of the time when I ask a question like that, people talk about, like, logistics. Like, I have 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. or whatever.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And I feel like you both, and what they don't have is the, like, headspace of an emotionally supportive partner. So they're kind of always defending their career. It challenges their confidence. And I just feel like you didn't even really have to talk a lot about logistics because it's like we work that stuff out. But what matters is that we emotionally, we get it and we're supporting each other. And so beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's like a huge gift and privilege. And I I've seen what I've felt in previous relationships in ways that like that creep in, and that's why I'm not with those people. And obviously, and it didn't work out. And then seeing other artists who like have that with or without kids, without caregiving, you know, but just having partners who are like, you know, not supportive. And it's really heartbreaking. And I feel like we really, Sean and I really like click and get each other where we're like, yeah, like, cause it's just like, what's good for me is good for you. And of course I want to see you like bloom. Like that is like, it's only inspiring and beautiful. And like, that's love too, of wanting to like, you know, like the person you're with or whomever, however the love is, like to support them in being their biggest self, you know? And, yeah, I wouldn't, there's no way I could would be the artist I am without Sean and their support throughout like a lot. I mean, I don't drive. So, Sean has driven me thousands of miles, you know, like literally to residencies and places, studios with like a truckload of materials. So there's like, yeah, we could get into logistics, but like that's like a, it's in like been my studio support and vice versa. And like, I don't build things and they do. So it's just like, you know, it's really, it's huge. Yeah.
Amazing. Sean, anything you want to say in response? No need if you don't, but.
Yeah. I mean, it really hit like the mental freedom, you know, cause I don't really think about that as much. You know, I think about the, obviously the emotional and logistical support, but yeah, to, you know, I mean, I can feel like I get into a whole discussion around that in general, like as far as relationships and like, what is the point if you like, it's only going to breed resentment and disconnection, you know, when you do that. But yeah, I just feel very lucky and I'm happy that you have that as well.
Yeah. That's so beautiful.
I think the thing that sometimes holds my partner and I back is more the logistics, right? Like having, you know, three kids under 12 and,
yeah,
and
that's just like, a,
you know, yeah, like, yeah, of yeah. course, I don't mean that to say that I don't have limits, but it's the way that you described the potential of expansiveness, like knowing that you could expand because you have this loving partner.
Right.
That is just such a weight off, you know, to not have that kind of ceiling that you're always, and of course there's lots of other ceilings that we are dealing with, like capitalism and racism and all of those things.
Right, totally.
But, yeah, I just, that was so good. Okay. Well, I feel like didn't I say before we started recording? I'm like,
I just looked at the time, I was like, wow, we really.
Sometimes I'll ask two questions and we'll, you know, have gone an hour and here we are. Like I haven't even gotten into anything yet, but I do want to kind of turn us towards talking about the Painting at Night show a little bit and just the idea of making art about caregiving. I think, you know, for me, part of the purpose of this show is to spotlight artists who are caregivers, not necessarily who are making work about caregiving or maternal experiences. But there's, of course, a lot of overlap there because I think when you are a caregiver, that identity is just very overwhelming. And of course, it like influences your art practice in emotional, physical, all financial, all the ways, right? So it sounds like for you, you know, your daughter was already kind of like 12 or more when you were committing to art more full time or, you know, art practice. So I don't know if like, does the concept of painting at night, like kind of making art in the margins of parenting, like, I mean, I think it's still relevant no matter what, but what has that looked like for both of you?
Yeah, we were talking about this because we're like, oh, it's sort of different because Roar was older, but it was like, And because she was like in school or we could, you know, sort of leave or I mean, you can bring anyone to the studio, I guess, but like I would bring her to the studio with me sometimes and be like, hey, or do the, you know, like read or do homework or something.
Right.
But it looked really different. Like, I feel like, what did we say? We just talked about this. Like it was because she's older. It just kind of, yeah.
Well,
just,
I mean,
oh, that's what it was.
What?
Go ahead. No, I just was remembering the admin stuff.
I think that it's like, well, you were just talking about like, you know, all-nighters, you know, kind of like finishing things mm-hmm. and like, you know, the nighttime is very much like a time that you can make, you're just kind of deciding, you know, because it's like your kid's finally asleep. You want to unwind and just zone out, you know, like then you're like, okay, well, this is my opportunity for a lot of people to be like, okay, well, I guess I should do art, you know, that mm-hmm. it's hard to keep eyes on like prioritizing yourself, mm-hmm. you know, when you're a caregiver, because it's like, it's very draining physically and emotionally. And so I think the nighttime is when you're like, kind of like, okay, well, this is my opportunity and deciding, am I going to do this or not do this? You know, personally, I've used a lot of nighttime times because I'm a sculptor in my studio, you know, I don't make things in here as like my art admin time. You mm-hmm. know, like mm-hmm. where I could catch up on things or like think through something or write out a proposal during those times. You know, it's very much, I think, you know, using like her being at school, that's like my studio time to like just do the things I need to take care of. You know, this life, it looks very different depending on if you're a single parent or mm-hmm. Or what, you know, there's multiple types of caregiving if you're taking care of your parents or, you know, all of that. But I think painting at night is very much a time of like that, you know, decision time and mm-hmm. kind of always getting the energy to prioritize what you want and that making reminding yourself that it's important.
Mm-hmm. That's so well put.
Yeah, that's Sean said it. Like, that's great.
What about that artwork that is kind of tackling concepts of caregiving? I'm curious if there's been artists who've made work about caregiving that have been, you know, inspiring to you, if you've seen like the themes of caregiving creep into your work. Like Sean, you kind of already talked about this idea of like being public stewards of care and how we can care for folks on the street who literally need warm places, like, and how that, you know, to me, that is care. Like we're talking about care at like this capital C, like more conceptual community level, which directly impacts the mother nursing at night, you know, like mm-hmm. it's, we're all connected. But has there been work about caregiving that both of you have been inspired by?
For me, I'm connected to it in a more like a community social sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like work directly about caregiving or parenting is sort of less prevalent in a way, you know. I feel like it depends on what, if you're in the art market or if you're doing it for yourself. I feel like a lot of times caregiving is not seen as something of importance or as important, you know, like in when you're trying to think about the work that people are making that is sellable, that are more successful, you know, it's not generally considered a subject. I don't see many artists talking about it directly. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of times I don't even know if artists are parents or not. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not something I feel as public mm-hmm. In a way. You know, I could be wrong, but that's just like from my
no, you're not.
You know, not until maybe I meet an artist and right. I know that they're a parent, you know. I think that for me, I think that, you know, it's, you can't escape the influence of caring for someone within mm-hmm. your work, you know, just, it changes your whole perspective, you know, because I have to care for this person that I'm thinking about caring in a larger sense, you know, thinking about, you know, people who are are struggling or people who could benefit, or like if you're going home at night and you're at a bus stop, it would be really nice to have, you know, some warmth for you and your kid just logistically. It's like, you know, it can be very stressful traveling with a child. So I think in those ways, it's, you know, it's a little bit secretive. So I feel like for the show, it's helpful. You know, I don't really see calls for artists who are caregivers in this way. So it kind of like to make it more visible, I think is, it's really helpful because it's so common. Like most of us in this world are caring for someone, you know,
or have been cared for.
Yeah. So I think it's making it more visible will be helpful for other people struggling and to think about like, how can I do this and be like a caregiver?
Well, what are you both looking forward to and during the show? Is there, you know, have you juried together before? And is there anything specific that you, you know, kind of look for when art really speaks to you? Or is there no limits really to what you may be inspired by or what you would consider putting in the show?
We haven't juried together. We've juried separately different things. So this will be nice, like, you know, collaboration. And I think like you were saying earlier, as far as the open call, like for me, it's not necessarily has to, the subject doesn't have to directly be caregiving in the work, you know, so but that's not a prerequisite for me. It's just an opportunity for caregivers to get showcased in some way. So it's just about the quality of the art, you know, for me. And I very much am drawn to ideas, you know, and so I definitely look for, I think it's actually good that we're both doing it. Cause like, you know, she's like, you know, interested in the material. I'm interested in the ideas and why, like, you know, why you're making or what is it? Is it, you know, expressing what you are, you know, trying to accomplish? Is it have like, like obviously all work has thought behind it, but like, you know, that really speaks to me, I guess the I don't know how to explain
the concept.
The concept.
I'm excited. I'm open to anything. I'm always like a little bit nervous about jurying. Maybe I shouldn't say this, because I'm like, it's just like a funny thing to be like, what is like being the decider, being like the holder of the aesthetic, or like the, it's like, I feel a little bit like it's so personal, but it's, that's important. But I'm like, I guess when I imagine other people and like what they deem is like worthy, it's like, okay, well, I don't necessarily agree with you, you know? Yeah. So I'm always like, am I allowed to do that? And I just have to lean into it and say, yes, I am allowed to decide, you know, and give myself that permission. But, so yeah, I'm excited just to see, because I've never seen anything, you know, I've never seen a call like this, and I've never gotten to look at like all this work made by a caregiver, you know, and me, you know, whether it is about the actual subject of caregiving or not, but just and it's exciting and interesting to think about like that conceptually, like, okay, like when was this made? When did you kind of, you know, create time, or were given time, when we were given time to make this work? And so like having that, you know, like knowing that context is really interesting.
Yes. A couple things to respond. I think, Sean, like you said, the two of you are going to be such a great balance of, you know, kind of looking at ideas and concepts and then materials. Everyone would wish to be a fly on the wall as you're like going through these submissions. It's going to be great to kind of hear the conversations that you have. The other thing, like to your point, Elisa, about like, you know, you being the ones who get to decide this round, I think that's why it's important for us to repeat this show, because, and to have different jurors, because there are themes that speak to certain people that don't speak to other people and certain kinds of work. And, you know, that's why I love like when a big group show like this is repeated, because you see like the influence of the jurors, but also the community expanding, and also the ideas like kind of building on each other. Like we're kind of having this like, you know, lattice effect of even just the show itself and the artists who are in the show. So that's, you know, just like a really cool thing. And that, you know, I've had people ask before to kind of your last point, like about when they're making it, like, do I actually have to have painted this at night? Do I have to be a painter? Do I have to have painted it at night? And I'm like, no, that's just the like title, you know, that's the idea is like, you could have painted it from 8 to 3 while your kids are in school. Like that's when I make my work, you know, but the idea is more you're holding the identity of caregiver and the identity of artist, and you're figuring out every day how you're reconciling those two identities. And whether that literally conceptually comes out in your work, as in you paint a lady breastfeeding, or, you know, it's just the way that you move through the world and your work is affected by that. Like it's this whole spectrum, you know, and I think that's what makes the show exciting, is there's room for like a lot of diversity in what we represent. So I'm really excited to have both of you participating. Just to drop a couple details, the show this year is being held at Opalka Gallery in Albany, New York. We're super excited to have it there. And the deadline to submit is April 1st, 2024. The actual exhibition dates will be September 3rd through October 12th, 2024. And we are planning on kind of an event weekend in mid-September when we'll be gathering, doing some things, and hopefully doing some community, you know, events and ways to gather. Okay, we're going to wrap up with our final five. I don't want to go because I would love another hour to chat with both of you, but I know your time is valuable, so I want to honor that. So I always close these interviews with five final questions just for us to get to know you with a little fun, quick answer. So although everybody hates this first question, I might have to change it. Who is your biggest art crush? Because it's like so hard to answer that as an artist. Sean?
You go. No, Elisa, go first.
Okay.
I think I say this all the time, but I think who it can be in this world or in the spirit world.
Any, yes. Yes.
I think Belkis Ayon is my big, it's not one of my biggest art crushes, I'll say.
I don't know. The first person that came to me is El Natsui. So I'm going to go with that. I like the way of making and the collectively.
Okay. Favorite place to travel or a dream trip you'd like to go on? Lisa, back to you.
I really want to go to Central America. Like Costa Rica, Spanish-speaking country. That would be a dream.
I really want to go to Norway.
Me too.
Oh my God, the coldest place.
And I want to stay in one of those cabins with the glass to see the Aurora Borealis. And
that'll be beautiful.
Yeah, that's what I want to do.
Okay, tell me a film or a book that has been a big inspiration to you.
Moonlight, hands down. Favorite film.
Love it.
I watch a lot of TV. I'm going to pretend I read a lot, and I'm going to say, and I haven't even finished it, but, recently I've been reading Undrowned by Alexis Pauline Gumbs. What is it? Black Feminist Lessons from Marine Mammals. And that was like really, has been blowing my mind, and I love it. And it's so beautiful.
That sounds great. Favorite meal.
Seafood tower, like a huge expansive seafood buffet.
I would love like a really gorgeous, delicious salad with like some salmon or shrimp or something. Mm. And it has like a lot of like seeds and nuts in it. Mm-hmm. And really good dressing.
And some cheese. Somebody on this podcast, I can't, at the moment, I can't remember who, but they said for that answer, a salad that's been well labored over. Mm, and yeah. I just like, I think about that all the time because I'm like mm-hmm. a salad girl and mm-hmm. it's, you know, you can throw together a salad, but then mm-hmm. you can like really put together a salad. Yeah, and it's yeah. like, oh, those salads are so yeah, good.
Delicious. Yeah, totally.
Okay. Who would you like to give a shout out to supporting your work?
Wow. Who? Anybody? Anyone?
Anybody. Doesn't everybody. Have to be everybody.
Okay. I'll say everybody.
I would like to give a shout out to More Art as an organization, public art organization. I feel like they definitely like helped me with a start in art and doing public art.
I don't know. I for some reason, like the right now, Ruth, I believe Ruth Adams from Art Oh My, this director, that she was really awesome and supportive. There's other people, and I'm so sorry I'm blanking, but everybody, I love you. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
And where can folks find you? I'm sure they're going to want to connect with you, follow you, see what you're up to. Are you on Instagram? What's your website? All that.
Yeah.
I have a website, it's just SeanDesiree.com. I have an Instagram, which, you know, it's not heavily posted on. You know, I need to get back into that. So it's just Sean Desiree Studio is Instagram. And that's basically all I have.
My website is Alisa. What is it? Alisa SekelianosCarter.com, I think. Yeah. That's my full name.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. It is.
Okay, great.
I haven't pulled up.
Yeah, I was like, it's not studio. And then my Instagram is the same, at Alisa Sekelianos Carter. And I post pretty like consistently, not all of, I mean, I post on there. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. <I post. laughs> Well, thank you both so much. Again, the deadline to submit to Painting at Night is April 1st of this year. And can't wait to get to meet you, hopefully, at Opalka and to see all the amazing work come together. Thank you just for your generosity in sharing today and just the generous way that you're navigating this world as artists and partners. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you for having us. So excited to see all of your work, people.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
The Artist Mother podcast is curated and produced by Kaylin Butine. Music by Josh Middleton. Editing and mixing by John M. Butine. Please visit www.artistmotherpodcast.com for episode notes and to find out how you can further support this podcast.